May it please the Court, my name is Paul Dreyer. I'm representing the appellant DuPont Community Credit Union in this case. Just to give the Court a brief background, the facts are fairly straightforward in this case. The appellee, Annie Bodkin, filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy on August 13, 2009. At the time that she filed the bankruptcy, she was the owner of real estate located in Highland County, Virginia, and she listed the value of her real estate on her bankruptcy schedules as having a value of $22,500. In addition to listing the value of the property, she also listed as a secured creditor First and Citizens Bank, who held a first deed of trust on the property with an amount of $24,124.19. DuPont Community Credit Union was a judgment lien creditor of Ms. Bodkin, holding a $9,800 judgment lien that was also docketed and recorded in the land records, thereby serving as a judgment lien against Ms. Bodkin's real estate. In Ms. Bodkin's bankruptcy schedule, she did not claim an exemption on either her Schedule C for any interest in her real estate, nor did she file in her homestead deed that was recorded in the Highland County Clerk's Office any interest in her real estate.
Can you tell me what a homestead deed is?
Your Honor, the homestead deed is what a debtor utilizes in a bankruptcy case to claim an exemption in various property. Under Virginia law, under Virginia Code 34-4, an individual debtor can claim up to $5,000 in homestead, which can include a variety.
You file a deed?
You actually file a deed. The debtor signs it, and it's recorded in the circuit court, the clerk's office, where the record, real
land,
estate record.
Where the land records are?
Right. Okay. Right. It's recorded in that, the jurisdiction where the debtor resides and where the debtor has real estate.
I just wasn't familiar with the term.
Sure. So the homestead deed, Ms. Bodkin did not claim any interest in her real estate on the homestead deed. I believe she claimed an interest or exempted from the bankruptcy estate in her homestead deed, some cash on hand, some bank accounts, and I believe a tax refund that she was anticipating being receiving for the year that she filed. Ms. Bodkin, subsequent to filing her bankruptcy case, filed a motion with the bankruptcy court to avoid DuPont's judgment lien pursuant to 11 U.S.C. 522F. The bankruptcy court denied her motion, asserting that since she had not claimed any interest in her real estate, that she was not entitled to avoid DuPont's judgment lien. Ms. Bodkin then, of course, filed an appeal to the district court, and the district court reversed the bankruptcy court, holding that because of the language of 522F, that she would not need to claim an actual exemption under in her homestead or under Schedule C in order to avoid the judgment lien. So those are essentially the facts of the case. What DuPont's argument is in this case and where we believe the district court erred is on several counts, but the first is having to do with the interpretation of 522F. That, of course, is the lien avoidance section. There's been other cases that have held, in particular, a bankruptcy appellate panel from the Ninth Circuit, In re Gosami, listed four requirements for a debtor to be able to utilize the exemptions under 522F, and that would be they have to be entitled to an exemption under the bankruptcy code, which Virginia has opted out of the federal exemption. So if you file bankruptcy in Virginia, you have to file exemptions pursuant to state law, which Section 522 of the Bankruptcy Code allows courts or states to opt out of the federal exemption. The second requirement was that the property must be listed in the debtor's schedules and claimed as exempt. Third is the lien must impair the exemption, and fourth, it must be a judicial lien. I don't think there's any dispute in this case that, number one, DuPont's lien is a judicial lien, so it qualifies under that. And I don't think there's really any dispute that DuPont's lien would impair Ms. Bodkin's exemption, her homestead exemption, if she had in fact claimed it. But our point is, and what the bankruptcy court held, was that since she didn't claim it, she's not entitled to the lien avoidance mechanism of 522F.
I find it rather strange that the bankruptcy court so seemingly went out of its way to protect your client's interests. Your client was in default. And I don't mean to suggest that the bankruptcy court acted improperly, but it just strikes me as strange that a bankruptcy court would go behind the record and you know, sort of root around looking for a reason to rule against the debtor. What's going on here?
Well, I think in the bankruptcy court's order as part of the appendix, there is some reference to some case law, and I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't remember exactly what the bankruptcy court cited, but said that if you file for a motion for default, there still has to be the underlying facts, and the court has a duty to examine those facts to see if they're justified entry of a default judgment order. In that case, the bankruptcy court said, because Ms. Bodkin did not file the homestead exemption or claim any exemption on her homestead deed or Schedule C, that she didn't meet the requirements for 522F lien avoidance.
And the district court cites cases that says when the debtor has no equity subject to the exemption, is that true? That you either cannot or should not or need not
claim the Your Honor, this court in the case of N. Ray Snow, it was a 1990 case, dealt specifically with Virginia Code Section 34.5, which dealt with, I guess the best way to explain that, 34.5 is an exception to the exemption rule. What 34.5 says, if you paid for a piece of real estate for, like, example, what Ms. Bodkin did, and the lien holder that gave you the money, the purchase money to purchase it, still holds a lien on it, you can't claim an exemption under 34.5. But the Snow case held that even though that's the state law, 522F basically preempts that and says, no, if you could claim an exemption except for the lien, then you can seek lien avoidance under 522F.
Even where you have negative equity. She had negative equity, right?
That's right.
So she had less than nothing.
That's right.
So what would the homestead deed protect?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the homestead deed, what typically is done, and I practice bankruptcy from the debtor's perspective as well as creditors, is we file a $1 exemption in a case where there's no equity in it. And the purpose of that is, and what I cited in the brief is, the whole concept in a bankruptcy case is when it's filed, all the debtor's equitable and legal interests pass the bankruptcy estate, and the only way that you can reclaim those interests is through filing a proper exemption. And the bankruptcy code and 11 U.S.C. 363 gives the trustee a great deal of authority over a debtor's property, and that includes leasing it, selling it, using it to basically generate funds for the bankruptcy estate to pay other creditors. So the exemption is the means in which the debtor precludes the trustee from taking an interest in that property. Even in a case where there is no equity, technically the trustee would have the right under 363, for example, to lease the property. And the debtor has a possessory interest, and if you don't file an exemption protecting your possessory interest in the property, you're taking the risk that the trustee would utilize his authority under that code section to use the property to benefit the bankruptcy estate. So really, Ms. Bodkin, even though there was no equity in her property, and we acknowledge that, she by not filing the exemption either on Schedule C or the homestead deed, she did that at her peril, at the cost of potentially having the bankruptcy trustee assert some sort of interest in that property. And again, I think the bankruptcy or the district court in this case basically adopted Ms. Bodkin's argument, which was that 522F allows a debtor to have a hypothetical exemption, which means you don't actually have to claim it in order for the lien avoidance. But again, I would redirect the court's attention to the Snow case that I cited earlier. And again, the language in that case indicates that the debtor is entitled to avoid a lien to the extent that they could have claimed the exemption in the absence of the lien. And again, that had to deal with Code Section 34.5. In that particular case, the Snow case, it had to do with a lien that was imposed by a landlord against the debtors. And there's been numerous cases in other bankruptcy courts that have construed the language of 522F to require an actual exemption be claimed and not be just a hypothetical exemption that Ms. Bodkin asserts. And that was the Church case. That was a bankruptcy case, 2009, out of the District of Massachusetts, where, again, they indicated that you actually have to claim an exemption in order to gain the benefits of 522F.
Doesn't Rule 1009A give the debtor the right to file an exemption at any time while the proceedings are ongoing.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't have to, the debtor doesn't have to do it initially. They could do it later on.
The problem, Your Honor, with that is you're right. They could file an exemption under Schedule C, but Virginia's law on homestead deeds is very strict. You have to file your homestead deed in the clerk of court's office within 5 days of the creditor's meeting, of the 341 meeting. And if you do not do it within that time period, you are barred from then asserting a homestead deed. The Nguyen case, which is a case this court decided, I think, in 2000, really reaffirmed that notion that the procedural requirements for filing a homestead deed are rather strict, and that you have to follow the state law, and that says within 5 days of the creditor's meeting is when you have to file that homestead deed. So that's why Ms. Bodkin was kind of out of luck on this case, in that the time period for her filing an amended homestead had passed by the time the lien avoidance motion had even been filed in the case.
But that would have implications in her waiving some of her rights under state law, wouldn't it? But it wouldn't trump the operation of the federal bankruptcy law, which says if you had a right to file a homestead exemption but for the lien, you still get the benefits of it. How would Virginia, even if she waived something under the scheme of Virginia law, how would that trump federal law applying? And that would seem like that's the purpose of it. It is the lien that caused her to make that decision, presumably. So how would that prevent the operation of federal law? Because Virginia, she might lose some Virginia rights.
Right. But again, she had to assert at least some sort of exemption in order for 522 to be put in play, which she could have claimed. She could have claimed a homestead exemption in this case, but again, because she didn't do it, and again, the Nguyen case, I'd point out that was the case this court decided that the debtor in that case specifically lost the benefits of his homestead rights because he didn't follow Virginia or
But isn't that
Virginia
a fiction,
law.
Really? If you're reversing your mortgage, if theoretically a homestead deed on Virginia law is, for example, I have $20,000 of equity in my property, but under Virginia law, the $5,000, no matter what happens, you can't touch that, correct?
That's correct.
But if you don't have any equity at all, it's really a fiction to file that.
Well, I don't dispute that there is, from the standpoint of equity, there isn't anything you're protecting in the sense that there is no equity. You don't have any equity in it.
Right.
But the advantage of filing at least even a $1 homestead exemption is in the cases, for example, where you believe that there is a secured interest against your real estate. And, for example, I've had cases where the bank has filed the deed or recorded the deed of trust in the wrong jurisdiction. So it becomes the real estate is an unsecured piece of the loan on the real estate is unsecured. And if you filed at least a $1 homestead exemption within the time that Virginia law requires, you can go back and amend it and increase the amount of the exemption that you're protecting. So there's some reason and purpose for filing a homestead exemption to protect against the scenario that you may not anticipate down the road.
Counsel, this has nothing to do with anything, but I'm curious. Why did Virginia opt out?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
All right.
I just practice in what the parameters of the law is, and I don't know what the reason. I think a majority of the states, I believe, have opted out.
Is that right?
There are some states, certainly, that do follow the federal exemptions, but it seems like a majority of states have opted out of it. One additional point is that the district court's interpretation of 522F also, I think, conflicts with the other portions of 522, in particular 522L, that says, if you are a debtor, you have to list all of your property and list all your exemptions that you wish to claim. And if you take the district court's interpretation and saying, well, you can claim a hypothetical exemption for lien avoidance purposes, it really conflicts with the other mandates of that code section that says you have to claim all of your exemptions and list all of your property that which you claim to exempt. And again, there's a variety of cases that I've cited in my brief from various other jurisdictions that have held, and facts very similar to this case, that have held, if you don't claim an exemption, it's not automatic. And if you don't claim it, you can't get the benefit of the lien avoidance provisions of 522F. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Whitfield? May it please the Court, I'm John Whitfield, and I represent Annie Botkin, who's the debtor in this case, and appellee. In preparing Ms. Botkin's bankruptcy, I had to look at a couple statutes. One is a statute that controls the homestead deed, Virginia Code 34.4, 34.5. Filing the homestead deed is a crucial element in planning a bankruptcy. Read the statute. Well, 34.4 allows my client to file exempt up to $5,000 in a homestead exemption. In addition, she gets $500 for any minor child or dependent. So in Ms. Botkin's case, she was able to claim $5,500, up to $5,500 in exemptions. In fact, we drafted the homestead deed to only claim $2,700-some, leaving $2,777 in unclaimed exemption. So she had the potential to claim yet another $2,777. We didn't claim not a penny, not a cent, not a dollar of interest in the real estate for a number of reasons. First of all, there was no reason to. She had no equity. She was underwater. There was nothing to protect. And the reason why you file an exemption is to protect the property so that the trustee doesn't sell it for the benefit of creditors. There's no reason to. Moreover, 34.5 actually precluded us from doing that. 34.5 says you cannot assert a homestead exemption against the purchase money lien. And that's why she was underwater, was because of the purchase money lien. So if we were to file a homestead deed for just a penny, it would have been violating 34.5, which is part of the whole homestead exemption scheme. So not only would it not have done us any good, but it would also have been prohibited by state statute. There's no reason to do it. It would have been also false for us to have said she had a dollar's worth of interest. She didn't. She was underwater. She had no interest. Now, the concern is, well, what will the trustee do with the property? That's why you engage in homestead exemption planning. Will the trustee take the property and sell it? In this case, the trustee abandoned the property before we even filed our motion to avoid judicial lien because all the property of the state was either exempt or of no value. In this case, there was no value. So there was nothing that my client needed to do to protect her property. It was already protected without asserting the homestead deed. The other statute that we had to look at before we filed anything in this case was 11 U.S. Code, Title 11, 255, I'm sorry, 522F1. And we read that statute, and it clearly speaks in terms of a hypothetical exemption. It says you can avoid a lien to the extent it impairs a homestead to which you could have been entitled, but for the existence of other liens. That contrasts with 522L, which is the statute that requires that you list property and list exemptions and claim exemptions. 522L's purpose is to administer the estate. So the trustee can see what can I take and sell for the benefit of creditors and what is exempt and what stays with the debtor. 522L says the debtor shall claim exemptions. 522F says you can set aside a lien to the extent it impairs an exemption to which you would have been, could have been entitled. Very different language. So there's no tension between those two sections. They're talking about two different situations. One is a claimed exemption that you must use if you're going to protect property, versus one is a hypothetical exemption that you would have been entitled to but for the lien, which is exactly this situation. She would have been entitled to a homestead exemption of an additional $2,777, an unused exemption that we had. We could have put in that homestead deed. We didn't. because it was impaired by the liens on the property. And in this case, it was impaired primarily by the purchase money lien. And the statute says you cannot assert this against them. So it was a perfect impairment, if you will.
I guess after this case, you'll claim zero in your homestead exemption.
Well, certainly thought about that. Why would you put down a zero? Well, there's case law that says, Berry Field, which is cited in briefs, says if you claim zero, that's equal to claiming nothing at all. You don't have a claim. You still lose. So,
well, except then you can amend, I guess is what.
Well, you can't amend.
Adversary would say.
You can't amend after 5 days, after the 341 meeting. So, but see, the whole purpose of the homestead deed
is... You can't amend or you can't file.
You can't amend. What you're stuck with what you got. Because if we could still amend, we could amend yet. But no, I think we are precluded from amending by relying on the plain language.
Or at least you would
statute.
Have satisfied the bankruptcy judge here.
Well, yes,
if he's seen zero.
That's right. Now, a lot of... I think if you read the statute tracks this case beautifully if you fit the facts into the statute. In the mathematical formula that was added in 1994 under 522F, and I've set that out in a table in my brief, you walk through the language of the statute, you plug in the numbers in the case, it works beautifully. Everything fits exactly according to statute. Where the confusion comes from, I think, is prior to 1994, there was a lot of confusion about what the statute meant because it didn't have that mathematical section that clarified how it's supposed to operate. So the Fourth Circuit, for instance, had ruled that you could not do lien avoidance if you're underwater. So prior to 94, in this case, in the Fourth Circuit, it would be, well, you can't do this. The 94 amendments clarified, made it clear that, oh, yes, you can. Regardless of what the law may have been before 94, after 94, it's clear you can do lien avoidance even if you have no equity in the property. A lot of the cases that still think you have to actually claim instead of relying upon a hypothetical exemption have their roots in 394 cases. Best example is a Virginia case from Norfolk in 1991 in Ray Wall. In that case, very similar on facts to this. And the debtor argued, well, the statute says you don't have to actually claim it. It's a hypothetical exemption that you could have claimed, but for the impairment. And the judge agreed that, yeah, if you look at the statute, if you look at the plain language of the statute, it does say that. But it would lead to a nonsensical result, the judge thought, because the person was underwater. The judge felt like you couldn't claim an exemption if you were underwater. So the only way you could claim an exemption is if you had equity. And if you had equity and didn't protect it, you're going to lose it anyway. So of course you had to claim it in order to protect it, in order to avoid the lien. Because by definition, under the jurisprudence of the time, you had to have equity in order to claim an exemption, to avoid the lien. Now we know that's not the case. So if you take the same identical analysis that the judge in N. Ray Wall used, well, first of all, the plain language is clear. Yeah, you don't have to actually claim the exemption. And then you look at the purpose of promoting a fresh start, preserving the exemption, preserving giving the debtor the advantage of the fresh start, everything points in the favor of doing exactly what Ms. Botkins has asked to do. And N. Ray Wall clearly misapplying the law because it was prior to 94 and the clarifications of the statute then that made it clear that you could be underwater. You didn't have to have actual equity in order to seek the lien avoidance. So this really is about a case of if you rely on the statute, can you rely on it without having a game of gotcha that requires you to engage in a fiction, that requires you to put on a deed under oath that you have property equity value that you don't have, that's not true, in order to claim an exemption that the Supreme Court of the United States in Owens said is a hypothetical exemption, not an actual exemption. The plain language, the cases that have been cited, I believe, rightfully applying the 94 amendments, all make it clear that it's a hypothetical exemption, does not require the actual exemption to be claimed. And the defendant and the bankruptcy court have simply conflated 522L and 522F.
Did the bankruptcy court give you a chance to appear in support of your motion?
No, that was the real surprise.
It must have stung.
It was a real surprise because we had filed the motion. The pretrial order says if there's no response, prepare a default judgment order. I prepared it, submitted it. And we had a hearing date set if there was no judgment entered. So I was prepared to go to court if I didn't get my default judgment. So the day before the hearing
is when you got the order.
I get the order. I said, oh, it's my default judgment order, and then read it. And so, no, I was never given the opportunity in the bankruptcy court to make the argument that I later had to make to the district court.
Did you file a motion for reconsideration? Not to suggest that that was required. Or
no, I just...
You just took it to the, I just, to the district court.
Unless there's other questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With Bill. Mr. Breyer, you have some time remaining.
I just have a few brief comments. To answer one of Judge Davis's questions to Mr. Whitfield, as far as the amending the homestead deed, if you have filed in the 5 days a category of property, like, for example, a prorated tax refund or real estate, if you've done that within the 5 days, you can later amend the amount of the exemption. In other words, if you anticipate getting a $500 tax refund, if you do it within the time period, later when the taxes are actually filed, it's $2,000 and you have money left on your exemption, you can file an amended homestead to protect that. So that is the procedure on that. Again, I would just direct the courts back to the N. Ray Snow decision. Again, considering the would have been entitled language in the context of a debtor who was trying to assert a homestead exemption against a landlord's lien that 34-5 said they couldn't do because of state law. But again, this court said that the language of 522F and the would have been entitled language of that section allows them to go ahead and claim or seek lien avoidance of that landlord's lien in that case. And I believe if the court, I'd ask the court to adopt the similar reasoning that was used in that case in this one to require debtors to actually file an exemption and not just have the hypothetical exemption as asked for by Ms. Bodkin. Thank you.
We'll come down and greet counsel and then go into our last case.